Good morning. I want to thank the RNIB for inviting me here. This is my first time in Glasgow, and last night was my first time with an Iron Brew, and I've had too many. If I'm a little fuzzy, I promise you it's the Iron Brew, it's not the whiskey. But it has just been lovely. The people that I've met, the people that I got to see again, it feels like coming home. So thank you for giving me a chance to be here and share a few thoughts. Where's the button? There's the button. So before we get started, I think it's important for you to know sort of where I come from in my context, because I'm not the average nerd at Google. I'm actually a failed opera singer. I studied classical music in university, and I realized in my mid-20s that I was making a lot more money waiting on tables than I was singing, and it probably meant something. So I fell into tech, where I spent 10 years at Apple. I worked on the first iPod, the first iTunes, G4 Towers, G5 Towers, Final Cut Studio. Then I went to Sony and made phones for a couple years, and even worked at Disney Mobile, making games. But then I got a chance to come to Google, and it was at Google where I learned what accessibility is. I was the lead technical program manager for Google Play Music, and we had a test engineer come into a meeting. She turned on VoiceOver, and I heard, button, 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 button. Yeah, I hit a laugh. I didn't know what it was, so I said, what's that? And she said, this is Google Play Music for someone who's blind. I said, that's stupid. How do they use it? She said, well, that's why I'm here. So that was my introduction to accessibility. Never thought of it. Even though I was at Apple and Sony and Disney, it was never a part of my world. It was never part of the work that we did. So I had to learn somehow. And I had to learn, and that's how I learned. So with it, I took on accessibility for Google Play, then did a dalliance into VR and AR. But then about 6 years ago, I joined the central team, and my first job was to make all of Google's products accessible. So we built little accessibility teams across the company. And then 2 years ago, I moved to the UK to start Google's first accessibility site outside of the US. And one of the things I'm most proud of that we've done there is the launch of the Accessibility Discovery Center in conjunction with RNIB. Robin helped us name things. We made sure that we had a locally authentic language around accessibility. And so our relationship with RNIB has been going back for years. So again, thank you. We are better together. So why does Google do accessibility? Well, fortunately for me, accessibility is part of our mission statement to make the world's information universally accessible and useful. And the accessibility mission is about making the world's products and the real world itself more accessible. And because we're Google, this means both on and off the device. This is everything from Google Maps now having the ability to tell you whether or not a restaurant has wheelchair access or hearing loops, or making sure that Workspace works with Braille readers and Braille displays. And we take a holistic view of both mainstream products being accessible, but also new and exciting bespoke products making them accessible. Because disability, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but this is important to remember, disability doesn't, in fact, impact everyone. There's those of us who are self-identified with a disability, and these changes, these features can be life-changing. And then those of us who are not identified, like myself, I didn't realize I had dyslexia until I took a test in my 40s and realized, oh, all these things that I'm really bad at, there's a reason for it. So it's either because of ignorance or stigma, there's a non-identification with disability. And then there's the friends and allies of people with disabilities. If you're in a chair, you can't go to a restaurant if there's steps, so you're not going to go to that place. If you look at people nowadays, the Gen Zs and millennials, they care an awful lot to identify with things that have meaning to them. So from a pure business perspective, it actually makes sense to be inclusive and thoughtful, because it's going to literally bring you more business if you walk the walk. But frankly, everyone's going to benefit from thoughtfully designed and inclusive products, because every one of us are going to be, if we're lucky enough to get old, we're going to have some vision challenges. We're likely to have some hearing challenges. But then again, if you have a broken arm or just carrying a baby, you're one-handed. Or if you go outside on a day like today, where's the sun, and the contrast is bad, the screen, you can't see. So a thoughtfully designed product can help everyone, no matter who you are, where you are, or when you are. If we do our job right, you're going to be helped. So when it comes to building inclusively, there's a little secret I have to tell you, because getting started is really hard. When you're just getting started, you have to make a choice to do it or to not. So at some point, this means you have to choose inclusion over something else, because there's always going to be a constraint in your project. You never have enough money. You never have enough time. You never have enough resources, and those things matter because you have to focus to be able to make the product or service that you want to. So as when you're getting started, it sounds counterintuitive, but you have to learn what to exclude in order to know what to include. And then over time, it just becomes part of the air that you breathe. It becomes part of your DNA. You realize the benefits, and it just becomes part of how you do your work. So there are five key methods that I think about when it comes to being inclusive. One is leverage your strengths. You want to do something that you're good at. As a musician, I think of a jazz pianist as sort of like gods in music. They know every note, they know how, every mode, they know every key, and they can improvise spectacularly. And when you want to create something for someone that you don't know, for a community you don't understand, you don't want to be learning your instrument. You don't want to be playing chopsticks and trying to create something. You want to be thoughtful and good at what you're doing so you can really improvise. The most important, of course, is nothing about us without us. You always want to design and build with and for someone, never just for someone. Someone who lives with disabilities lives in a world that was not designed with them in mind. So they can tell you exactly where the problem is. They can also tell you probably what the solutions are. And together you get to create a something that is sustainable and viable. And that's scary because there are like 1.2 billion of us. Start with one. You start with one person. You start with one feature. Heck, start with one bug. Because this is really a process. One of the most important things about accessibility is it's a process of learning. You're never going to be done because people are different. Technology is evolving over time. So never make perfection the goal. It's progress. 10% better, 10% better, 10% better is better than waiting for some day where you're magically 30% better, because by the time you get there, you're probably building the wrong thing anyway. So what I want to share is a story of accessibility innovation at Google, specifically around captions, because it's important to realize that all of these things are true, even at a place like Google or a one-person shop. And starting with captions allows me to go back to 2009. And there's a lot of talk today about AI, artificial intelligence, because of ChatGPT and Bard, and it's really exciting. But Google's been doing this since 2009. Our first experiment with AI in technology and accessibility was YouTube, when we added automatic captions in English. It wasn't great. In all honesty, it wasn't great. But we learned that lesson that something that's not great is better than nothing that's perfect. So we continue to invest, we continue to build, and we continue to refine the product and technology over time. Where now we have 13 different languages in YouTube where we have free automatic captions. They're not perfect, but they're getting much, much better over time. We then took this technology, added it to Google Meet. And Google Meet now has 15 different languages where we can provide captions. And we can now even translate the language from English into different languages. So you can, in a business environment, bring the world closer together, because if someone doesn't speak English, they can still be understood. And we even added the ability to provide transcripts as well. But the fun really happens on mobile, so I'm going to focus onto mobile. We have a really cool application called Live Transcribe and Notifications. And what this does, it provides real-time transcription in over 80 different languages. And if you can't or choose not to speak, you can pull up a little keyboard and respond and type your answer. So imagine going to a doctor without an interpreter. I can read what they're saying, they can correct it, and I can respond myself. Real-time, real interaction. But since situational awareness is a challenge, we also provide solutions to help you understand when your name is being called. Or even when things in your world are going off, whether there's a baby crying, or even when your microwave or washing machine are going off. We can tell you these things. And it was invented by these two people, Dimitri and Chet. And I'll let them say a few words.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I completely lost hearing when I was 1 year old. Technology provides tremendous opportunities to help people with disabilities. I'm a research scientist at Google, and I'm developing speech recognition in technology. Speech recognition accuracy finally became so good that I could fulfill my dream for whole life. to use speech recognition to communicate with people. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, and how are you?
I'm doing good. What can I get you today?
I would like tea. Like transcribe.
I don't know how to use Windows, sorry. So, don't clap, I'm embarrassed, really. So what's important to realize is this is the great start of technology. And then we realized it could do more because of the collaborations we had with the community. So we took these AI algorithms that used to live in the cloud and shrunk it down to something that lives on your phone. So now in about 7 different languages, we can provide real-time transcription of content on your phone. So of any website, any video that gets sent to you, on TikTok, we can provide video content, captions for anything that's there, even if people don't do it for you. And then we realized it could really help for the phone as well. Okay, come on, Windows, you can do it.
I hesitated for a few seconds, and I realized the enormity of it, what it really meant. I'm 55 years old, and for the first time, I was able to call my son.
This is Matthew. He likes to swim in cold water.
After a swim, you feel alive.
Like really, really cold water.
I also swam across the English Channel.
But that's another story. Matthew is deaf.
People think if I got a hearing aid on, I could hear everything. And that's not true. I lip read most of the time. I have 2 boys, and they're both very important part of my life.
This is Matthew's youngest son.
Hi, I'm Harry.
He lives in Hong Kong and plays rugby.
I always want to keep in touch with him. Before, I need to communicate with him through Zoom or WhatsApp. I would try and lip read him, but it's really hard because it's not 3D, it's a flat screen. When I got the Google Pixel phone, I could live capture Peter. Harry was the first person I phoned. It was incredible. And we were talking for about half an hour. All of a sudden, he said,
Dad, do you realize this is the first time we've talked on the phone?
I was speechless for 3-4 seconds, and I realized what it really meant. I'm 55 years old, and for the first time in my life, I was able to call my son.
So that's powerful, how technology can bring people together. But we weren't done. We realized this ability to have captions on your phone is only helpful if you were verbal. So we then took another kind of technologies, text-to-speech, and now we munged them together, so now we have live capture for calls, which allows someone who is nonverbal to be able to use the phone as well. So now you can be both deaf and nonverbal and be able to use the phone just like anybody else. You read the captions, you type out what you want to say, you click send, and we'll create a voice for you. And then the technology itself evolves over time. Behind me, there's a screen capture of a Asian woman wearing slightly chunky glasses. But to the right of her glasses, you see the words, you should be seeing what I'm saying, just transcribed for you in real time. This is an experiment we have in augmented reality, where we can take real-time transcriptions and embed them into glasses that you can wear. So now you can be having a conversation with them and looking them in the face. So the technology itself evolves over time. And I apologize, this is a very sort of hearing-centric, but this change of language is really important. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to just share 2 quick videos of an application called Lookout, which is a bit more relevant for the people who are blind or low vision. Lookout is an application on Android, if you're lucky enough to have one. I don't hold it against you. Where we can use computer vision to help recognize items and things in your world in real time. So this first... Oh, goodness. Okay, I'm not going to have... I'll talk you through some demos. I didn't realize I thought I'd given access. So Lookout itself, it uses an on-device AI model to recognize text, recognize cards, recognize menus. You show it, it thinks about it, and then it reads these things out to you. Something that was really exciting that I also can't show you is a... I should have brought my laptop, I'm sorry. The other thing that's really exciting, something that we actually announced in conjunction with RNIB. At GAD just a couple weeks ago, we announced this new version of Lookout that uses some of this new generative AI technology to interact and inspect images on your camera. And through this, you can be told what it is. For example, I showed a picture of my recent trip to Africa, and there was a woman feeding a giraffe. Behind them, there are trees and people and clouds. And you could say, what color is her shirt?
The shirt is blue.
And so you could interact and have a conversation with the technology to understand what these things are. So we're at day zero of this technology, but the same way that captions evolved over time, this new generative AI was going to evolve over time to create solutions that we don't yet even understand. So I'm really, really excited for where technology is going and how it can impact and improve everyone's lives. Ooh, here's the demo.
Okay, Lookout V2A demo. This is a Pixel 2 running on residential Wi-Fi, and we'll be using this photo of a mutt on the beach. There's the ocean in the background, some clouds, and some hills. Let's give it a whirl. So first we're going to share it to Lookout.
Analyzing image. We now have some sound effects to let you know what
is
happening.
In this image I can see a dog is running on the sand. I can also see a ball in its mouth. In the background I can see the water, mountains, and the sky.
What breed is the dog?
The dog is a mix.
Does the dog look playful?
Yes, the dog is playful.
Now I can also use this to type in my queries, but I'm going to keep doing voice typing. Describe the ocean.
The ocean is calm and there is a mountain in the background.
For sake of time, I don't want you to play more, but you can see what this does. You now have the ability to get much more information on anything. You don't have to have alt tags and descriptions added to it. We can provide this for you. Again, it's not perfect, but again, something that's not perfect, that is thoughtfully done and co-designed with the community, is so much better than nothing. So just to lean into the sustainability aspect of this, I want to share with you one, this is like the one factual slide, and this is the thing that I want to make sure you understand. There's two ways of having this kind of information available to you, having AI algorithms. One is on device, and the other is in the cloud. When something is on device, these models are smaller, which means they don't do quite as much, but they're also faster and don't require any internet connection. So many of the things that Lookout does is on device. All the text things are OCR based, all happens on device. But we needed more horsepower to be able to do that kind of analysis of the images. So that goes up to the cloud. So whenever you're looking at an AI algorithm, you want to think about, and maybe you can ask, is this on device or on the cloud? Because it'll help you understand how rich will the experience be. And then leaning into the sustainability of the work of this conference, I want to just share with you that these AI models, these new generative AI models, aren't cheap. They aren't free. According to a website, I have the link in this. I have a link below, and I can share with anyone if they're interested. The training of ChatGPT-4, it ran over 45 terabytes of data with 175 billion parameters, and it took the equivalent power of 8,333 homes in a month. That's an awful lot of power just to train one piece of software. And that doesn't include the cost it does to send each query towards it. So there's a benefit to having these things on device. It doesn't take anything extra. But there are solutions towards this. So there is hope in the future. There are more efficient and targeted algorithms. You don't need to have these massive things that can do everything for everyone. And these smaller algorithms are easier to train and take much less energy. And frankly, these things are important, though, so investment in renewable sources. So at Google, for example, we spend an awful lot of time and resources in terms of wind, solar, air, so that the carbon footprint of these things are lessened. But it takes intention, it takes time, but all of these things can be solved. So just as a recap of the things we're talking at the beginning, when you want to build something that's inclusive and thoughtful, leverage your strengths, do what you're good at. Nothing about us without us. Always include the people you want to design with. You always want to design with and for instead of just for. Invest a lot. Start with one person. Start with one feature. Start with one bug. Because this is a process. Perfection can't be the goal. 10% better and 10% better is much better than waiting for 20%. But the most important thing is to just get started. Because when you do, you have an opportunity to really change people's lives. And this is my last video. It's just a series of people's faces of different ages, genders, races, sexes.
A look can say a lot. A look can be honest and true. A look can speak for you. Say what's on your mind or in your heart. A look can say what's best unsaid and find the right words without having to say a word. A look.
A woman is looking left to right.
It's great to see you.
Bisecting lists.
Can say a lot.